right, how are you doing? This is S. Anthony Thomas. This is the S. Anthony Thomas Show. Now, I know what you're wondering. S., who do you have this week on the show? Well, I'll tell you. This week I have a friend of mine, a comedian by the name of Molly Sperduto, old friend of mine, very funny lady. And what we talk about on this episode is we talk about comedy, we talk about comedy during a pandemic, and we talk about how she went from majoring in journalism in college to becoming a comedian, and from becoming a comedian to becoming a comedian and business owner. The business, Ginger Ninja Productions. Now, is it a great show? Yes. How do I know? I was there. You want proof? Okay. You ready for the show? Of course you are. Let's do it. Well, hello. How are you?
Good. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me? I can hear you clearly.
I can hear you very clearly.
Well, that is the idea. Thank goodness.
Excellent. We're on a roll.
That's the thing. You always start with the foundation. You start with the foundation, and then you build the building upon it. And this foundation here is clear audio signal.
Excellent. I mean, I was trying so hard to come up with ways to be interesting and charismatic, and it wouldn't have mounted to a hill of beans if you couldn't hear me be interesting and charismatic.
That's usually how it works. A lot of times, you know, I'm very interesting and charismatic, but I'm upstairs sitting in the bathroom, and there's no one there to enjoy it.
Oh, the story of my life.
No, it's like you almost feel like you want to start sounding like Rodney, you know, no respect at all. You know, so it has been a while. I have we have actually not been in the same physical space in quite a while.
Yeah, and I think the only times that we've actually seen each other were in the context of the Spaghetti Warehouse shows.
This is correct. For those that are listening, Spaghetti Warehouse was a comedy club inside of, drum roll, a Spaghetti Warehouse restaurant. and they had a room in the back where they did comedy. And that's where the person you're hearing now, Molly Sperduto, and I met and did some shows together. And this was such a long time ago. Goodness gracious, was the early 2000s, was it?
I don't know why I remember this so well, but the first time I was there was the fall of 2007. And I was there two more times after that. The most recent time was New Year's 2009 into 2010. So about 10 years ago.
Yikes.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like that.
It does not feel like 10 years. You know, does not feel like 10 years. No, one of the things is because I see you on Facebook. We follow each other on Facebook.
And you know, that's exactly it. I feel like that's kind of both the blessing and a curse with so many people where I'm like, I feel like we've been keeping in touch this whole time just because I silently or not so silently stalk you on Facebook and know everything you're up to already anyway. But I think because I've seen everything that you're up to, it doesn't feel like it's been that long since I've seen you, but it really has.
It's one of those weird things about Facebook, essentially, that, you know, the people you want to be in contact with, because they're physically close to you, you go, you know, I kind of saw what they did, so I really need to go over there and
And then the other awkward thing too is when someone like tries to catch up with you in person. And you don't remember how much you're supposed to know and how much you're not supposed to know because of how much you already know. So.
You find that awkward?
Maybe not with people I already know, because obviously, like, especially with like closer friends or people like that, they'll be, if I say like, oh yeah, I heard about that, they'll go, oh, I posted it on Facebook. I think the most awkward one was when I think I was trying to get to know my classmates ahead of time before a study abroad. And I met this one girl in person and I'm like, oh, you look so familiar. Have we met before? And then I realized she looked familiar because I was stalking the heck out of her Facebook photos. And when it clicked and she was like, oh no, I don't think we've met before. I'm like, you're right.
No, I think before the restraining order gets
Yeah,
her filed.
exactly.
Wait a minute, why are you eating cupcakes? You said you were on a diet. Wait a second.
You like chocolate now?
Now that's what I that's what? I think you should get back with Brad. That's just it's just one of those things where the people are just so lazy when they stalk, because I get a kick out of like old girlfriends who don't know that I know they're stalking my Facebook page. Like, you do know we have lots of common friends who go, you get mad every time I do something good. Something good happened to him. Yes, I want something better than that to happen to me. You get a lot of that.
Yeah. But we also
But what
always
I want to ask. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go
I
ahead.
was gonna say like but we also just when it comes to social media, we also always just put our best foot forward anyway. So good things are happening to everyone on in Facebook, but when you see them all in real life, their lives are horrible, according to them. Ever
Yeah,
notice that?
I'm a little confused. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out. I didn't realize I was supposed to put my best foot forward on social media. I think I've been doing it wrong for this past few decades at
Well, I mean,
I put up whatever.
I support that.
I know. No, I've been at places where people take the selfie, and they're acting like it's a party, and you're sitting next to them going, "This place blows." What?
Yep.
This place literally blows. And then, this because the selfie is literally taken 17 seconds before they look to your left and go, "Let's get the hell out of here. This place sucks." But online, oh, you guys were jamming. It was just embarrassing. But when I was looking at your Facebook page, when we started to follow each other, I started to notice you were doing lots of stuff. You were in different places. You're running in mud. What the hell is going on over there?
Oh, the mud runs. Yeah. So a couple years back, to actually start at the end and then work my way back. So I've just gotten really into obstacle course races. The Tough Mudder is my favorite. And there's a couple of other like 5K. The Tough Mudder is like this giant day long thing because it's 10 to 12 miles and it's mud, it's obstacles, it takes a good chunk of your day. And I also do some of the 5Ks that are, a little bit less involved. But I had gotten involved in them because my best friend talked me into them. He was doing like a 5K and then he was doing that was, obstacles and mud and stuff. And then he later that year did a mud run where you were, it wasn't so much obstacles, but it was a zombie run. So you had like three flags around you and it was like snatch the flag, but zombies were taking your flags. It was kind of weird. We didn't like it all that much. And then there were a couple of obstacles just to say it was an obstacle course. But I came to see him run that one. And then he talked me into running one myself. So, and I was never really much of a runner beforehand. But my dear friend Pete is the type of person who just has this charismatic way about him that if he tells you to do something, you just kind of shrug and do it. Like, he'll be like, Molly, finish that drink. Okay. Molly, go over there and do a dance. Okay. Like you just do it because he says it and it just seems so easy. So he was like, Molly, run this race with me. And I'm like, okay. So I learned to run and I ran a race with him. And I got hooked. And so I went straight from the 5K where you're running from zombies to the 12 mile in the mud Tough Mudder. And I never looked back after that. Haven't been able to do one in a while because of, pandemic, but looking forward to getting back to it.
I'm just trying to figure out how one convinces a person to, you know what? That would be fun for you, running around in mud for 4 hours. Yeah.
Well, it's the obstacles. For me, it's the obstacles. Because there's people that run marathons and half marathons, and I tip my hats to them. And that, I think, impresses me even more because If I ran for that long, even if I was able to run for that long, I would get bored. And so with the races that I do, there's, it breaks up every so often with like a hill to run up or monkey bars to attempt to go across, but I'm not good at monkey bars, so attempt to go across means I grab onto one ring and I fall into the water below. But like in that case,
Okay, well.
it's kind of fun because you feel like Super Mario is the best way to describe it.
I'm trying to figure out, because when I met you, you said you were studying journalism, if I remember correctly.
You're correct.
You were getting a degree. Okay, so I just want to make sure I didn't okay, so old guys still have good memories. So I was just curious because, whenever I see somebody that does comedy or is involved in comedy, I'm always curious about, what started that? Because everybody that I know that's been involved in comedy, okay, I should say 99% of the people, when they were a child, there was something there. It was a funny parent. There were two funny parents. There was a funny uncle or something like that. Or they saw something on television and it lit a spark. What made you do it? What made you go, I gotta, get involved in entertainment, I should say.
I'd always been interested in entertainment, even before comedy. Like, I was in all the school choirs and the school band and the show choir, and I took dance classes. Like, I was always into the performing arts. I also realized that I think I also just always liked making people laugh, even when I didn't realize that I did, because I think my earliest memory of enjoying telling jokes was when I was a kid, we had popsicles with the jokes on the popsicle stick, and the question would be on the part that you hold, and then you eat the popsicle, and the punchline's on the other end of the popsicle stick. And every time I ate a popsicle, I had this one teacher in my grade school. She was like an extra, not an extracurricular, but like a computer teacher. We went to computer class once a week. And for some reason, she was just my target. Every time I ate a popsicle, I would tell the joke to her. And God bless her because I ate a lot of popsicles, so she put up with a lot of my crap. And just even beyond that, like when I was in a little bit older, like in middle school, I started writing like a monthly newsletter and literally like writing it on a sheet of loose leaf paper front and back. And I would just circulate it by showing all of my friends the one copy that I had and then having them give it back to me. And I just kind of lived to see them laugh at it and hope that it was funny. And so not long after that, I was trying to pursue an acting career. And I had seen that there was the thing that actually got me into stand-up itself was when I was looking in the newspaper for acting auditions. And there was a listing for first night, one of the first night, like New Year's Eve performances. And they were looking for, and it listed this whole thing like, we're looking for jugglers and puppeteers and stand-up comics and fire eaters, or like literally every type of performer that I was not, but I still wanted to try out for it. So I looked at the list of things and I went, stand-up comedy, I could try that. So I made an audition tape. I was 15 years old. And I wrote like a little 10-minute set, and I set up a camera in my living room and invited three friends over and did my set in front of my three friends in my living room. And then I, oh, yeah, you know where this is going. I sent the audition tape in.
Yes, I did.
It went about as well as a 15-year-old doing stand-up for the first time in their living room in front of three friends would go, which is to say I did not get a part. But I got hooked from the moment that I did that, though. I didn't want to stop. It would be about maybe a year and a half, 2 years before I actually did my set on a stage. But until then, it would be like whenever a whole bunch of friends were over at like a party or something, and I felt like there was enough of a lull, I'd be like, hey, you want to see my stand-up routine? And then I'd get up and do it in front of my friends. And finally, my church was doing a variety show maybe a year or two later where I got to actually do it in front of a real audience. And it was, thankfully, it went well, because if it did not, I probably would have been very discouraged. But it was a room full of people from my church who knew me since I was a kid, so they were going to support anything I did or said. So it was very well received. And yeah.
It's amazing how serendipitous that person
Yeah,
is,
because like
isn't
if
it?
I were to have just like thrown caution in the wind and been like, let's try my new stand-up routine at the open mic night at, fill in the blank comedy club, and then I went there and then saw how that would have gone, I would have probably not pursued it any further.
It's really funny because I'm sitting there and it's amazing how you see the foreshadowing, because technically, if you really think about it, with the things you just told me, you have the popsicle with the punchline, I mean, with the joke and the punchline under the popsicle, first dinner show, and then then you had your relatives watching you do stand up, first bringer show. It starts right there. Your first dinner show package and first bringer show. Do you remember your first? I mean, people, I can tell you the, I can tell you from 35 years ago almost, I can tell you what club I went to, the address of the club, the number I got. I could tell you the date, January 8th, 1986. I could tell you the club, Comedy Works, 126 Chestnut. I could tell you the number I got, number 16, and I can tell you that I did well the first time. The second time, and I remember every
You
first
what?
bomola. You remember your first bomola? The first time you bombed really hard.
I don't remember the first time I actually bombed. 'Cause yeah, I can't really explain why, but I think my theory, just going off the cuff right now, is that because I knew I had the support from, because that first show was for my church. The second time I had the opportunity to do stand up was for a variety show that my high school was putting together. So same concept. Everyone knew me, everyone wanted me to do well. So I think with those two shows behind me, and even though I did overall well in them, like not every joke landed the way that I wanted it to. So I still knew well enough that if something didn't land, just keep talking. And it's like, and you're like doing a monologue instead, and you won't feel as bad when you stop for people to laugh and they don't. So I kind of applied that on shows that didn't go as well for, normal audiences. So I don't really think that even when I was not doing that well to begin with, that I was ever stopped and like had that moment where I was dragging my feet home in despair, because I don't know. I maybe because I knew what that I was capable of doing a good job, so I wasn't as discouraged by doing a bad one. Who knows? I really don't.
It takes a lot of people a long time to figure that part out. That you have to, you have an allotted time, you need to fill it. And if you start to speed up and sputter and get discouraged and change your body language, just like anything else, the audience will pick up on that and they will now not trust you anymore. So it's a good thing that you were able to pick that up so young, because it takes a lot of people that I know, it literally took them 2 or 3 or 4 years to figure out what you just said, which you seem to have picked up really,
Yeah,
really
I
quickly.
think also just having a theater background helps a lot, because I'm also just used to being on a stage talking. And even though most of, I mean, my teachers, directors, everyone at the school plays growing up knew that I had an affinity for being funny, so I generally got funnier roles, but not every line is meant to evoke a laugh. It's supposed to be a character. So at the same time, I'm used to being on a stage talking and not expecting laughter, and just knowing to keep on going, because that's what you do.
Yeah, that's one of the blessings that I picked up from stage classes, where I just literally it was just like you said, like they'll
Yeah.
get the next one. It's gonna keep going. Because the whole idea is if they're entertained, even if they're not, obviously this applies to years and years ago, because at this point we've both been doing it for a long time. You've mastered all the techniques, but in that early form of yourself, obviously, it's important to be able to get to do that. You know what I wanted to know, and this is pretty interesting, because I was obviously before we started talking, and I was okay, let me look up some stuff, and I went to your IMDb page.
I think I know where this is going. Go on.
Oh, really? Do
I
you?
only have like two credits on that page. So, and they're one's the movie and one's the movie sequel. So,
Yeah, but you're the
that's true,
title
I am.
character, though. I mean, you are the girl in the cornfield. None of those other people is the girl in the cornfield. Those are the other people. This movie was not called The Other People with the Girl in the Cornfield. And what I wanted to ask, because they were both independent films. I mean, you had an interest in acting. Obviously, you taking the courses and the classes and things of that nature. How did you feel shooting an entire movie? This is not like you walked in and, you were an extra. You were the girl in the cornfield. You were actually her. So,
It was
how did that
interesting,
feel?
and I mean, it always fascinates me, honestly, to see all the goings on behind the scenes of anything like TV, film. I haven't had the opportunity to do too much on-screen work, but just seeing all the lights, all the cameras, all the angles, all the just everything that goes into making the simplest frame in front of your screen happen, just it fascinates me. So even as sitting around as an extra in something, I'm like, let me do it. I just, you know what? I don't even need to be on the screen. Just let me sit and watch this whole thing happen. It's so fascinating. And the so with the girl in the cornfield, the thing that actually also seems to amuse me the most is that even though I am the title character, I have only in both throughout both movies, I have one line and one line only. All of these shots of me otherwise are just me staring demonically at people and, maybe snapping someone's neck at one point. But it's funny because I met the director because I was an extra in one of his other movies. And as an extra, I actually had two lines. Not, I don't know how audible they were. I didn't actually get to watch that particular film, but it was like something like, what do you think, honey? And then someone pours me coffee and I'm like, thank you. Like, those are my two lines. And in my head, I'm like, as an extra, I had more lines in that movie than I have as a title character in these two movies combined. But
It's just, I was just wondering about that, because I know that when you move from a thing where you have complete control, you say what you want, when you want, how you want, you wrote all of it, you rehearsed it, you practice it, it's your work, and then you go someplace else and it's the complete opposite. No, your eyebrow was too high. And you go to the other, you're going, I'm so used to doing everything myself and controlling everything, and now I remember someone going cut and running up to me, because I was wearing a watch that was a modern watch, but it was a
Oh,
50s
yep,
movie.
I
Everybody's staring at me. You bastard. Cut. Sorry.
yep.
Put that in your pocket.
Oh, yep. Yeah, I was.
And that is weird. But I mean, but when you came,
Well, no,
I'm gonna
like
say, go ahead
just
No,
you go,
I said,
because I was just
so.
gonna say that I was an extra in another movie that I don't think's come out yet, but it takes place in the 70s, and nope, there was a lot of that conversation going around of what can and can't be worn on screen.
It's just a weird thing because I'm sure the continuity director is is running around like a movie narc. Wait a minute, that gum didn't come out till 1986, buddy. Spit it out, That, because every time they make a mistake, you'll find it online. Here's where they screwed up in this movie, and that's the person that gets in trouble with it.
Yep.
That's the person that gets in trouble with it. Now, what's the deal with the you do theater as well? Now, how is that how does that feel different? Does it feel different to you? Because I know that once you go from movies to from stand up to movies, that's a different thing. But plays are kind of close in a way. You ever do a one person show or were you doing acting
I've
another
never done a
different types of plays?
one-person show. And so, I mean, I'd done theater throughout school. But in my adult life, I had only started to do theater a couple years ago. I had gotten involved in a local playhouse near me, and the first it's a playhouse that does all mostly original plays written by members of the theater group there. So the first show that I was in, I got cast as a lead role. It was a show called Peter Pan's Death, and it was a I can't find the words to describe it, but it's like it kind of begs the question of what would happen if Peter Pan died, and or what would happen if you lose one of your heroes is kind of the theme of the play, and without giving too much of it away. But a lot of the characters in the play were based on the characters of Peter Pan, and I had gotten the role of Wendy. It was a very dramatic play, and I had always been used to comedies, so I think the biggest shock to me on that one was very much the fact that no one was laughing. And they weren't supposed to because it was a dramatic play. I was like, my character's on the verge of tears at times. They're not supposed to laugh. But being on stage, always expecting people to laugh because of the fact that that's what I do. Like the opening night, as I'm going through a monologue and people are, you can't hear a pin drop. In my head, I'm like, am I messing up my lines? Am I doing something wrong? Am I like, what's going on? What's going on? What's wrong? And then I'm like, nothing's wrong. You're doing fine. They're listening to you and they're enjoying a dramatic presentation. Just keep going. But that was the biggest culture shock to
It's
me,
like,
is that is the ability to be on a stage and entertain people without making them laugh.
did you feel weird when you have to express raw emotions like that? I mean, because the whole idea of what you do normally is you make people laugh for an hour, but when you, like you said, you're doing the dramatic, but when, but you can, you, there's a kind of hiding in comedy in some ways, there's kind of a separation between us and the audience in some ways, because we're telling them stories. Obviously, in most cases, they're fictionalized, so there's a little bit of a separation. But then you're on stage and someone, like your loved one dies and you're holding them, or someone, and you have to cry or express that emotion. Did you feel comfortable or uncomfortable? Because I felt really uncomfortable,
I will admit, as an actress, I have a long way to go with actually feeling comfortable with that. And in my, I'm, it's probably me being self-critical too, but I could probably stand to be a little bit better at portraying that to an audience too. Like, I feel like I do have a block, some kind of a mental block with that. And at least to the trained eye, it probably is glaringly apparent from someone watching me on stage. But it gets a little bit easier as you try to stay focused on the story, as an actor's probably supposed to do. But yeah, it's and Again, even the classical studies of acting, you know, have point to the idea of, you know, getting out of the actor's own head and staying focused on what's happening in the scene. And once you can do that, you stop all the going on in your head. Similar to like how I was doing the dramatic monologue, and even though I'm trying to be Wendy on stage, in my head I'm like, what's going on? What's wrong? What's wrong? Why? Like, that was me being in the theater playhouse, being Molly Sperduto, the person who is freaking out over how they're performing, not being the character. So that's definitely a personal flaw as an actor, and something that I feel will also get better with time and experience, which is why I'd still like to keep pursuing it. Maybe not right now when we're in a pandemic, but it is something, it is interesting that you point that out, because I definitely feel that, and it's something that I hope to be able to work on someday.
I can relate to that because I'm telling you, that was. I know you can relate to it because you've been a comic for a long time too. You know that nervousness right before you start getting good at it. You know, where it's hit and miss, where you know most times you're going to do well, but there's still that time when it's going to, you know, you're right, you're just about to get good, which I hate. That was a long time ago. That was decades ago, obviously, but I still remember, you know. Because after a certain period of time, you pretty much know how it's going to go when you go on stage once you figure it out and you get to be a good comic. But that's a weird feeling. But the thing is, I never was afraid. You know, I was always like, ah, let's get this done. But with the acting, with the theater, when I knew when they handed me what I was going to be doing, I was like, oh, sweet goodness. You know, I'm sitting there, oh, now keep in mind, the night before, there's 500 people laughing at everything I said, and then you go to this place, and there was only 15 people there. We were just rehearsing something in a workshop, but I knew that there were really good actors sitting there staring at me, and I knew there was going to be, okay, this is what you did wrong, Steve. I knew that was coming, so I'm going, oh God, oh, and I never. That's why I said it was. You go, here's the most dramatic thing where you have to cry. Oh, come on, man. They gave the comedy, the dramatic people, they found out what I did and they handed me, here's a scene. Your dog got stabbed in front of your grandma who was getting pushed down the steps while she was being set on fire. I'm like, come on, man. This is my first day here. We don't care. Get up there and be humiliated. So that's why, because that's when I knew that you did theater, I
Yeah,
had to ask you
although
about that.
in a sense though, like those super like exaggerated scenes are almost easier to act out than the subtle ones. 'Cause like if someone says like, you know, someone's stabbing your dog while your grandma's being pushed down the stairs, like you could easily, without even tapping into any emotion, just give this big wail and go, "No, stop it, my poor dog," without feeling like a lick of the emotion actually inside you. But it's the more subtle things that go on that are harder to portray.
It's just a weird thing. Because, you know, I was just surprised at how similar our stories were when you were telling me your origin story. I was surprised at how I shouldn't have been. We're both comics. We've both been doing it for a while. You know, when you write down the jokes and you force your
Yeah,
friends
because
to listen
you
to
also
it.
like you started really young too, didn't you? Yeah, I
17,
was
yes. Not too
yeah,
much
like
older
the
than you.
first time I was on stage, I was 16. So I understand that entirely.
The funny thing about it was the simple fact that you're going on stage and everybody that's around you who's a comedian, I don't know if this is, but with me, the people that I knew that became my comedy friends, my original comedy friends, obviously I still have them. I didn't throw them away yet. Depends on how they act. but they were all somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 to 10 years older than I was. You know, so when you're on stage as a 17-year-old, and your friends are 27, 28, and they're talking about wife and kids and husband and kids and my first baby, and I went to college and this, and going, I don't even have my Selective Service card yet. You know, I don't have a mustache yet. You know, and these people, you know, so you have to go up and try to relate to adults, and at that, you know, usually the comedy club audience is that coveted, cis within that coveted demographic, not 18 to 34, but you know, 20, 24 to 49, they're all right in that that group, and everybody's older, and nobody, they're looking at you, you shut up, punk. You know, you're trying to relate to them,
See,
get
the
out, you
only edge
punk,
that I
you know.
had was that throughout my 20s, I was still living with my mom, and my mom had moved into a 55 and over community that I had to move into after I graduated college because I graduated in the recession. So I wasn't living on my own anytime soon. So my like shtick for a while was that I was, you know, 22, 23, 20, whatever, and living in a 55 and over community. So even though these folks were like in their 30s, 40s, 50s, I'm like, I spiritually am older than you. So we all even out.
Especially when you go to bed at 7:30.
You want me to be completely
You
honest with you? I'm literally crocheting a scarf as we speak. Yep.
Wow, you're 100. That is, I'm sitting there, you do know you're still in your
Oh,
30s,
I'm
right? You
aware, but
realize that, don't
internally
you?
I like died of natural causes during the Reagan administration or something like that. Like that's how old I am.
Are you taking 50-plus vitamins? To get yourself ready for 20 years from
Ay,
now. You know, but it's really an interesting. He's like, oh, hey, that's my father's noise in my back. It hurts. You know. Now, when I listened to you speak, I know that one of the
Oh.
things you also do, one of your talents is
Yes.
voiceovers.
Though admittedly, I haven't done any in a little while, but it's another thing. Again, at some point when our lives under a little bit of control, I want to get back to. And I realize it doesn't make sense the way I say it at face value because voiceovers are probably the one thing that you can do from your home without having to socially interact with people. But my biggest issue is that I had, when I was living with my mom, cultivated a recording studio out of her walk-in closet. When I got married, my husband and I moved into a townhouse, and there is no place where we can shield ourselves from the noise that is our neighbors. And so my mom still lives 3 minutes down the road, so if I needed to do a quick voiceover job, I could still go to her house. But right now, I don't want to go to her house because I don't want to be responsible for getting her sick, given everything that's going on right now, you know? Yeah.
Oh, I can relate to that. That's the one. That's the one of the weird things. Yeah, because there's certain relatives that, you know, you have to literally, you have to stay away from them. I mean, just stay away. You know, you wind up washing. You know, if you drop food off for them, you gotta wash everything or spray everything down. This is it's really weird because you obviously I'm gonna move from here. I'm gonna go to Ginger Ninja Productions. I'm gonna go there now.
It is.
Because that's your company. And so as the booker, and you have I'm assuming you have 19,000 comics for
Sounds about
700
right.
jobs, right? Yeah, or you know, but the thing is, I know that when the pandemic hits and it hit everybody right in the teeth, you know, right in the teeth, especially people who are live performers. You know, what kind of adjustments have you had to make? Because I know you had to make some. Everybody had to
So
make some.
I mean, honestly, I was lucky enough to be one of the people that also had a 9 to 5 at the time that everything went down. So even though events were canceling left and right, I was, of course, reasonably bummed because I don't like to have to cancel shows. I don't like calling comics and saying, "Hey, sorry, the show's not happening." I don't like having an empty calendar. But for all the essential things, I didn't have to worry. I didn't have to worry about losing, you know, health insurance, income, things like that. So for me, I had a little bit of a luxury to sit back for a minute and see where what direction things were going in. And I know that there were a couple of people asking about virtual shows, like non-comedians, like people that were like, you know, people that I knew that were like, hey, my company's doing a Zoom happy hour. Can you have a comedy show? And I'm like, this was before I even saw any Zoom shows happening. I'm like, most of the comics I know strike me as traditionalists, and I feel like if I ask them to do comedy in front of their living room on a computer, I'm getting flashbacks of myself doing comedy in my living room in front of three friends and a camcorder. Like, I'm pretty sure they're gonna scoff at this idea.
Exactly.
But so I had kind of taken a back seat to just kind of observe a little bit. And I saw what was going on, and I saw that more and more people were doing Zoom shows. I saw, as restrictions started to let up a little bit, people were doing drive-in shows, outdoor shows. So that way, when so I started to kind of open myself up more to the opportunity. And so I have done a couple of virtual shows. I have done an outdoor show, and I have another one coming up in a couple of weeks. And have I done drive-in shows yet? No. Am I willing to? Sure, if the opportunity presents itself. But that's pretty much the direction it's going in. If the only comedy that can happen right now is outdoors and virtual, or indoors and very sparsely populated, then so be it. That's what we're doing. And I like seeing that because I like seeing the tenacity of our industry in that sense. I like seeing that no matter what happens, we're not going to go away.
Well, the funny thing about it is everybody that's gotten good enough to get booked has the, the having to stand on stage in front of a sparse crowd antibodies
That's
floating
you
around
are
in their
not
system
wrong.
already. So we all remember what it's like to stand on stage at 2 o'clock in the morning in front of seven people. So this is not foreign to anybody who's been doing it for a long period of time. So the pandemic doesn't affect in that specific way. But you see people, I mean, I see the outdoor shows. I've done some of those a long time ago, obviously not out of necessity, more out of that was what was offered to me. But when you do the outdoor show, how did that, I mean, how did that go? Because I'm assuming that everybody is spread out, and you have to have the sound system problems of
I
being
do. I have
outside. Do you have
mine.
your own sound system? Or do they have that?
And
Do they bring that?
so the first, so I've only done one outdoor show so far and another one coming up. And technically, the first outdoor show I did wasn't technically all outdoors. It was actually in a barn. And yeah, the places you'll go for comedy. But because it was on a park grounds, and so it used to they used to have horses there and so on and so forth. So this was a barn that was repurposed as a theater that they actually use as a theater from time to time. So it has a stage, it has its own sound system and lighting set up as well. So it wasn't just us like performing in a barn alongside horses. So it had like the indoor qualities of having a roof over your head and having some sort of semblance of walls for the sound to bounce off of, so that it wasn't just going into like nothingness the way that a completely outdoor show would go. But it also had giant bay doors that were lifted up so that there was enough airflow so that it felt like you were reasonably outside and not sitting in a closed space infecting people. And in that case, I mean, that had more advantages of performing indoors than anything else. So I think I kind of got away easy with that one. But we did test the sound for the show that I'm doing in a couple weeks, which is completely outdoors. And the only like it seems like it's just as effective. I didn't realize how far my sound system actually reached until I set it up and then had everyone walk to all corners of this field that we're performing on. I'm like, Can y'all still hear me? And they're like, yeah, loud and clear. I'm like, ah, holy crap, it works. I mean, of course it works.
It's I don't know. It's weird because I know that the outdoor shows, I mean, there's a unique quality, obviously, because it's outdoors and you have some of the distractions, an airplane, somebody driving by in a car, and people milling around who aren't even part of the audience, kind of standing around. But what do you think of the Zoom shows? I mean, people have asked me to do these Zoom shows.
So, I like them. I, well, here, there is a catch with them, though. It is difficult to use them to try out new material because of the way that Zoom functions, you can only really hear the audio from one or two people in the meeting at once. So, if you're telling a joke and only one person thinks it's funny, you still hear it, like in your earbuds, it still sounds like everyone thinks it's funny because all you can hear is one person at a time and there's one person laughing. And on the flip side, if you tell a joke and you think it bombs, it could just be that everyone that thinks it's funny is muted. So you can't really inc So you can encourage people to stay unmiked, but you can't force them to. And so I've always, when it comes to what I do for Zoom shows, I always do the stuff that I know works over 90% of the time in regular rooms, because no matter what reaction I'm hearing or not hearing on the show itself, I know it's gonna I know, like you said, you have a general idea of how the show is going to go at that point because you've done this enough. So I kind of stick to just that material on Zoom shows, because you can't get a gauge for anything new because of its limitations. That also being said, I absolutely love doing live shows. I cannot wait until they're a normal thing again, but I love the idea of saying, all right, that's my set. Have a good night. And then closing my laptop lid and grabbing my scotch and going downstairs and plopping on the couch and watching The Simpsons. That's my favorite part of it.
You know, daggone. I the thing is, I've seen a few. I've seen some good ones, but just like anything else, when a boatload of people attempt to do the same thing, it became a thing, all of a sudden. And when anything becomes a thing, the thing to do, the hot new thing to do, everybody kind of dives on it. So you see people doing it that probably should not be doing it. And I think that's probably what kind of got to me. Because when I went to ones that were people that were actual, that were comics or actors or people who knew what they were doing, I go, okay, I can dig this. But then you'd also get get someone who never performed, never thought of performing, but figured, what the heck,
Yeah,
and they jump
I
out there and they
mean,
do it.
well, similar to saying that that Zoom shows are not for trying new material, I also, for that same reason, don't think that they're for newer comics, because newer comics just by design have new material. But I don't like, I haven't really seen the ones that I've been a part of have all thankfully gone well. And a couple of the ones that I've seen here and there.
You had real comics
But
on
I
there,
mean,
though.
the way I see it, especially around this time right now, if they're not charging anything, and if they're just using Zoom to get their jollies on, and if people don't go in with high expectations, whatever it takes for people to just smile for a minute or two, even if it's not very well planned, even if it's dumb, just let people have joy here and there at this point. Life is hard right now, you know what I mean? If it was normal times, yeah, if it was like normal times, I'd be a little bit more judgmental. But
I
right now,
agree.
I'm just like, do what it takes to get you through.
No, Molly, judge
No,
them.
that's
Judge them. Judge them
that'll I'm
harshly.
saving that for the Molly's Perdido Says podcast.
Excuse me. Excuse me, lawyer. I was wondering. I wanted to ask you. This is another thing I was dying to ask you because I know that you book a lot of comics. It's like, oh, you might. The fact that
Yes.
now, do you do all the booking? Oh God. Okay. I'll put it to you this way. I had to do that for a short period of time when I was in LA, just a little bit. And I made the mistake of I was actually the booker for the show. The booker, I worked for the booker. The booker liked me. He asked me about someone. I went, oh yeah, that person's good. Should I audition? No, you don't need to audition. You can just put them, they can put that guy right on the show. Okay. Word got out that I said you could put that guy right on the show. And all of a sudden it became, let's annoy him because he's an entree to the booker. I wasn't even the booker, and everyone was a huge pain in the ass. You know? It's like when you're hosting an open mic show and you got the list with the 50 names on it, and there's people following you into the bathroom to find out if they're next. Well, you're actually paying people. You actually have real shows in front of real crowds with real comics, and you have to have more comics than shows. How in the world do you deal with that many comics all annoying you, or I shouldn't say annoying, requesting stage time and bookings from you, and you're doing it yourself with that many people?
I mean, don't get me wrong. I especially like anytime you put a show flyer up, you get like five people messaging you saying, "Hey, just want to know if you have any spots for me, blah blah blah." I try my best to redirect them to saying, "Hey, just shoot, here's my email address. Shoot me your avails because and I don't say that just as like a way to deter them, but honestly, that's just like the way my mind works. I pay attention to my emails. I have a very meticulous way of sorting things out, checking them, looking at them. Whenever I actually do book a show, I'm not going to look at my Facebook messages. I'm not going to look at my texts. I'm not going to look at my call log and say, oh, yeah, that person did call me on Friday and talk to me for 5 minutes about getting staged. No, I'm going to look at my emails. So I direct them there. If they take my advice, then they do it, and it's less bothersome to me because I see their email, I file it away, and when I'm ready to look at it, I look at it. And I'm also lucky in that most of the people that do ask me for stage time are people that I do want to book. So it's not very often that someone reaches out to me that I'm like, all right, just stop, quit while you're ahead, don't ask me this anymore. Like they're people that I genuinely like working with and genuinely like hearing from. So far I'm counting my blessings in that regard. I know that that will probably one day eventually change. Want me to book
Well,
you?
I'm going to put this less diplomatically than you just did, because, well, you have. Well, of course, you're
Yeah,
going to be
and
booking me.
I
I'm
heard
special. You've
on
seen. You've
at
actually
least
worked
one or
with
two of the
me.
episodes that I was listening to while I was studying for this podcast that you were looking to actually get back into doing stand-up, that you had, I guess, taken a break for a while.
Oh, I'll be back. Oh, to be honest with you, if it wasn't for COVID-19, I would have been back. I was already ready to go. I was ready to go in this summer. Then all of a sudden, something happened, and
I remember I do remember
world
you
shut down.
saying that. So, when everyone's back and going, I look forward to seeing you and I look forward to working with you again.
Okay, and I want now people are listening to you in about five countries, so I just want you to all to know that she literally just said that, and I'm recording it, so we're all going to hold her to that. Have her stand outside of her house with Steve S. Anthony signs. No, I'm just kidding. But no, what I was really I was really getting to was the it's just I don't know because I know that the you have to be doing. I mean, what kind of places are you booking?
The mostly the like the BMWs
VW,
and firehouses
private
and things like
parties.
that.
I'm telling you, for those of you listening, Some of my favorite places to play, obviously comedy clubs and theaters, whatever, is the place you love the most, obviously. But there's something about going to the VFW halls and the fire stations and places of that nature that some of those audiences are super appreciative and very attentive, incredibly into the shows.
100%
And
agree.
They can be some of the most fun things to do. Without question. And also you get free beef and beer. So you know how many beef sandwiches I got handed? Yeah, that was a good show, buddy. Here you go. I don't need 17 beef sandwiches. Yeah, it was great. Take them. All right. Here's some horseradish. Okay. All right,
I'll
pal,
tell you,
thank you. I gotta go.
The
some
firehouses more. Usually like, don't have bars, but like the VFWs and the Elks and them all do. And that will be the cheapest alcohol you will ever buy in your life.
Oh God, yeah.
Like,
oh, it's just, yeah. You get hugged by these guys, you know. It's like at a club, maybe people want you to sign something, but I mean, every VFW hall I've done and places like that,
yep.
Literally the entire audience will come up and hug you after the show.
Well, no.
And no, and obviously but you can't do that now.
I am.
So now you said you were married. You are married. Married, married, married. Married. An old married woman you are now. Much is different than the last time I saw you. You're an old married woman now because you're crocheting. And so how was the hubs with regards to comedy?
He's become a veteran comedy husband. And what's also super nice is that he went to school to study electrical engineering. So he's got his degree in that. So when it comes to me doing like sound and lighting and stuff, anytime that I have a question or if there's like a room with a weird setup or something, I'll just go to him and be like, all right, so there's this room and I need to set up sound and it seats this many people and it's this shape and it's got these type of walls and this type. He'll draw out diagrams. He'll explain to me how it works. And I'm like, I only half understand this. Tell me if I need to buy anything. And then he'll figure it out for me. So he's got the technical end of everything down for me, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
We
is he, how,
it was
is he, is he, has
5 years
he,
in February.
How long have you been married, actually? Oh, okay. So now you're really an official old married couple. How is he doing with regards to coming to the shows and the watching and has he fit in with the comics? Because I know sometimes the spouses or the girlfriends or the boyfriends, it takes them a while to fit in with the comics.
Oh, yeah.
Because as you know,
well,
being
so
a comic for a long time,
often.
We're all nuts.
And reason being is that we kind of have a bit of an agreement over this because he's very, very introverted. He doesn't prefer to leave the house if he doesn't want to. So like pandemic has been great on him. And I get it because, I mean, as much as I like being out and about, there's so many times where I just look forward to being home too. So I understand the sentiment. So generally speaking, kind of the agreement that we have is that if I ask him to come out to something for me, whether it's a show or even like an outing with friends or just something like that, if I ask him to come out, as long as he's not like sick or tied up with something else, he'll come out. My end of the bargain is that I kind of have to be discerning over the things that are really important for him to come out to. And the agreement pretty much works because most of the time I don't really mind going out on my own, especially when it comes to stand-up. I don't mind just going to the shows, managing my way around and mingling with people and doing my thing and then leaving and going home and, you know, having him waiting at home for me to settle down on the couch and talk about how it went. I have no problem with that. And for the times that he does come out, I think he seems to get along with the comedians fairly well.
soon as you said engineer, as soon as
The,
you said that, I already knew
which part?
that
The
part about what you were going to say. Because every engineer I know
Yeah. Yep.
does not want to come out and is a little introverted. I know a few engineers actually. So, when you look out and you see them in the audience, you're going, "What?" I remember a friend of mine. He worked. He was a he engineered, and he did some stuff for the stock market. And I'm doing a show, and I'm in the audience, and I see him sitting in the audience with his wife laughing. And after the show, I walked out. I'm going, "What?" He goes, "Yeah, I didn't want to say I was coming because I might have changed my mind, and I didn't want you to be disappointed." I was like, "I guess I gave you know, you know." I was like, "I'm just glad you came." I'm literally, I'm sitting with the comics after the show. We're talking. I'm going, "You know, my friend Joseph showed up, the engineer. Yeah, he never shows up. He showed up. I'm telling you, he showed up." Almost like I was making the story up. I'm gonna ask you. Because they know they. They I think they kind of knew him because we went to school together a long time ago. So he was more of a nerd than me. So, so I turned into the entertainment nerd, and he turned into the stock market nerd. So what I want to get to this one last thing. So I want to catch you before we finish this up. I have to find out why, how, regarding the Jinjin Ninja. The origin story to that. Why did you do that? Why did you, instead of just the performing side, you decided to run a business
Okay.
and
So
this is the business.
I was performing and I noticed that a lot of the shows were being run by my peers in the business. And it looked like a fun idea at the time. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention the fact that I had been taken under Doug Karp's wing for a while, who is a fantastic comedian who both held my hand through the process of running a show and also pushed me over the edge into getting me to just start doing it already. So I have him to thank a lot for the encouragement and the motivation to actually get it started. But the seed had gotten planted, and so I had started to run my own show. The first one I ran was a free show Sunday nights, 10 p.m. at a dive bar on the outskirts of New Brunswick. So, prime real estate. But yeah, but
Been there, done that. Oh,
yeah, here's the funny thing about it though. So I started doing that
flashbacks, but go ahead.
right after I graduated college. And like I said, before, I graduated college right in the middle of the recession. So at the same time that I'm running this show, I'm, with my freshly minted journalism and media studies degree, sending my resume out to places that had nothing to want to do with me, because no one was hiring anyone at that time. But meanwhile, I'm promoting this free Sunday night show in New Brunswick on Facebook, and I had people messaging me going, "Oh, you're running your own shows now? I didn't know that. My brother has a restaurant. We have a cafe. This guy down the street wants to do something with this club, blah, 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 blah." So there was just this work falling into my lap, and it was all like mom and pop coffee shop type of thing. So it wasn't like to the scale of shows that I'm putting together now, but there was a need for it. And as I started doing it, I'm like, okay, well, let me switch gears job-wise, and instead of trying to find my, golden production company job in New York where I was going to start out as a PA and work my way up the ranks in TV or something, because that's clearly not going to happen right now, let me find a job, any job that gives me a paycheck and frees up my nights so that I can figure out how to make this work as a business now that I figured out what I want to do, after I graduated college. And that's exactly what I did. So I had gotten, the day job, and kind of did the did those coffee house shows for a couple years, took a little break to re-strategize, and also got distracted along the way by things like, you know, getting into voiceover work and whatnot. And after a while, I had decided to quit that day job and take the business off the ground and start doing it full time. And that's kind of where I had, you know, I picked up other jobs here and there just to keep myself busy, because it still is mostly just a nights and weekends thing with the Ginger Ninja shows. But pretty much where it brings us to the Ginger Ninja of today.
I see the movie for the first.
What cracks me up so much life, about
from
it?
Journalism to Ginger
the thing
Ninja.
That cracks me up the most about it, though, is that
on Netflix.
I'd always wanted to do something in the performing arts, you know, acting, singing, whatever. And you know, the one thing that any parent will say to their kid that wants to pursue a career in the arts is have a fallback, because very few people actually make it big in the entertainment industry. So that's what I did. I had a fallback. I went to college. I got my journalism degree. No one wanted me in journalism, but people wanted me in the thing I wanted to do in the first place. So I needed a fallback for my fallback, which I ended up being the thing I wanted to do in the first place. Exactly. So
serendipity do. Oh my goodness. You know what? I'm glad we got an opportunity to have you on the show. You know, it was good catching up. And it was this conversation
wrong.
Would have been a little bit awkward trying to type all of this out on Facebook.
But
okay. Now tell you if you want to let everybody know what's going on, how they can get in contact with you. I'm going to put your information in the show notes anyway, but tell the audience how they can get in contact with you.
Yeah,
where you're going to be.
I've got two websites that I maintain, mollysperdido.com, and make sure that you spell Molly with an IE, and gingerninjacomedy.com. October 23rd, which is a Friday, is the live show that I've been alluding to, that it is a fundraiser for a local Boy Scout troop. We're having it at the Knights of Columbus in Jackson, New Jersey. And I'm not going to be on the show myself. I'm just going to be there to run things, but it's got a good lineup. Mike Morse is going to be headlining, who's always fantastic. And I'm going to be performing on a virtual show November 5th. I have not put that up on my website just yet, because the ink like just barely dried, but probably in the next day or two when I get around to actually updating my website, you'll see it there. But it's going to be a virtual show, and that is also going to be a fundraiser for an organization called Breaking the Chain Through Education, that I would definitely recommend looking them up online to see what they do. They work with children out in Africa, and the breadth of what they do is more than we'd have to open up an entire other episode for that. So I would definitely recommend looking them up and considering supporting by going to that show as well. Oh, I had a
and
lovely
I want to
time.
Say one.
Thank
I want
you so
to thank
much for
you.
Reaching out to me.
It was
thank
a pleasure talking
me.
To you. I had a good time talking to you. And of course, obviously, we will see each other at some point next year, because I'll be out and about again. And we'll actually be able to have a conversation. And hopefully, on one of those occasions, your husband will show up.
I will see to it that this happens.
And I'm going
to
bear hug him.
It'll be one of those things where I tell him he has to go, and he'll know that he has to go.
I just look forward to the car ride home. Your friend bear hugged me, man.
It's not the worst thing that any of my friends has ever done to him. He's used to that sort of thing. Oh. I realized as soon as it came out of my
challenge
mouth, I'm like,
accepted.
I
So
just should
anyway.
not have shown my hand like that.
I say when I'm gonna you're gonna go, why is he here with a super soaker? The hell is he doing with a super soaker? Was like, Molly said to do it, bro. ladies and gentlemen, Molly's Perduto. Check out her website, and also to the audience listening, I'm going to put her websites in the show notes. So don't just play the show and listen to it. Scroll
it
down.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Her websites will be in the show notes. Okay. All right, Molly.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye bye.
Okay. Take care.
Well, did I tell you, or did I tell you? You had a great time, didn't you? Of course you did. I had a great time. Molly had a great time. We all had a great time. So much so that I think we should do it again. How about next week? Same bad time, same bad channel. Deal? Cool. Much love to you. See you then.